morning. This is Mountain Money on KPCW. Today is Monday, November 6th. Check your clock. It is 9:06, not 10:06. We did fall back over the weekend. Doug Wells, my co-host, is here with me. Doug, some people may be a little confused this morning. Maybe they
a little confused because of the time and also the change in weather. We have snow, which is a good thing.
The change of seasons came quickly, didn't it?
As it should. That's what we want. You know, 2 weeks before, let the snow come so our ski resorts can open.
Well, we have a show ripped from the headlines this morning. Tax reform's a big topic ever since last Thursday when the House Ways and Means Committee unveiled the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act bill. Trump administration says it's going to slash corporate tax rates, reduce the number of personal income brackets, limit or eliminate a number of popular tax breaks, and, if it passes, marks the largest overhaul of the federal tax code since 1986. Whew, Doug, that's a mouthful. We have a couple of guests this morning that can help us digest what all of this means to our listeners.
Absolutely. And our first guest is going to be Jay Curtis. He's been practicing law for over 40 years. He's an estate planning attorney with Ray, Quinney, and Nebaker. And we're going to talk to him about, you know, why do people need estate plans? Should everybody have an estate plan? So I've known Jay for a long time. He brings a lot of wisdom to the conversation, and I'm looking forward to that discussion.
Our second guest, Blake Christian, is going to tell us all things taxes. He's a tax consultant with HCVT. He and I were just talking about what this Trump tax reform means to our listeners. That's going to be interesting to get his take on that.
He's very knowledgeable on that. He's got a summary. I think a lot of people are still trying to get their hands around what is this proposal, and he's got a lot of knowledge on that. Our final guest is going to be a local entrepreneur. His name is Tom Klein, and he is the founder of a messaging app called Loop Messenger, which makes it easier to gather groups to do all the fun things that we like to do here in Park City. So it's going to be a fun show. Stay tuned. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW.
Joining the Park City Chamber Bureau provides your business with lots of benefits, from business-to-business networking and promotional opportunities to access to our 1,000-plus membership database. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit, membership-based organization and a proud KPCW supporter.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW, our local source for Park City news. Our agents are Summit and Wasatch County's source for real estate, and we can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley here with my co-host Doug Wells. You know the saying, you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family. Estate planning can be essential to family harmony, but there are also solid financial reasons to have an estate plan in place as well. We have the expert in studio with us this morning to help us understand the basics and the nuances of estate planning. Jay Curtis has been an estate planning attorney for more than 30 years. He's with the firm Ray, Quinney, and Nebaker. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning. Good morning. 46 years, not 30.
Oh, wow. More than 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
So you started when you were 10.
Yeah, right. Yeah, 1971.
Let's start with the basics. How do you know if you need an estate plan?
If you have assets and you care who's going to receive them.
And if you want to make the most of those assets, right? A good estate plan can help protect your money from the tax man from getting it?
The tax man would get it if you have enough net worth. But I think the bigger issue is what do you own and who do you want to have receive it? And most people in America are not going to be impacted by the estate tax because the exemptions are so high.
So what are the steps someone needs to take, the first steps they need to take if they want to start an estate plan?
Have the desire to do it. And it's interesting, on the income tax side, we have a April 15th deadline. So when it gets to be February or March, all the procrastinators get their stuff in a shoebox and head to their CPA. But on estate planning, it's interesting in my world that how many people I've interviewed in the hospital that have now been procrastinating. I had a man at LDS Hospital a number of years ago who was wired with 10 or 15 tubes coming out of him, tears coming down his cheek saying, I cannot believe I'm doing this now. I should have done this a long time ago. I had a professor at the law school who had a pet saying that I did not understand when I was in law school, but the real world has forced it to home for me. You never do rainy day work on a rainy day. You do rainy day work on a sunny day. And right now it's sunny for all of us sitting here because we are not. Death is not imminent, but when death is imminent, that's a challenge.
Yeah, no, that's a nice wake up call for all of us. Now talk to us about what happens if somebody passes away and they haven't done estate planning work.
Well, the state of Utah, as have all of the 50 states, have written a will. It's called intestate succession. If you're intestate, then you do not have a last will and testament. If you're testate, if you died testate, that means you did have a last will and testament. And national statistics are about 1 out of 8 have written a will or a trust or have done something in writing. So the flip side is 7 out of 8 people are just going to let in our case, the state of Utah will write your estate plan for you.
And Jay, as you know, my firm helps people. We're not attorneys, but we help people understand the necessity for this. And one of the things I point out to them is if they die intestate, talk to our audience about what the state says happens to your assets for your kids, and at what age do they get those assets?
The state of Utah, in the intestate statute, makes a clear line of demarcation between a first marriage and a second marriage. So if you pass away in a first marriage, and let's assume that it's the husband that dies first, because most of the time it's men die before the women because of life expectancy. So if I was to pass away first in a first marriage, then everything, according to state law, is held for the benefit of my spouse. And that's normal, and that's what most people want. And if I don't have a spouse, then it's going to be divided equally amongst my children. There's nothing in state law that controls when you get it. If you have minor children, well, then you're going to have a guardian appointed, and it's going to be in the hands of the guardian. When does a young minor become of age? 18? Really? So you're going to leave assets to an 18-year-old?
Yeah, one of the questions I like to ask our clients is, you know, how much money does it take to screw up an 18-year-old? It's not much, right? If you leave an 18-year-old $50,000 or $100,000, you know, what I ask is, you know, what's the first thing they're going to buy? It's going to be a car.
That's right.
What color is that car going to be? It's going to be red, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So it's really important. It doesn't matter if you have millions of dollars or you have tens of thousands of dollars. Everybody needs to think through what they want done, because probably none of us want our kids to inherit all of our assets when they're 18 years old.
On a more positive note, though, my sincere feeling is that most people have a internal nudging, I've got to do something. And there hasn't been an event that causes it. But it's going to be either a friend that they play bridge once a week, or they go to the gym with them, but somebody that they know that's not related to them has had a serious life event, and then they have that feeling themselves, I really do need to get my act together.
That's their wake-up call.
It is a wake-up call, and it really boils down into two areas. What do you want to have happen to your assets? And so if you dumb it down to be as simple words as possible, you're going to say, what do you have in mind if you pass away? I'd like to do this, thus, and so. That's the first leg of it. And the second leg of it is, who is going to saddle up and make it happen? Somebody needs to take control of those assets when I can't, either because I'm incompetent or I've passed away, to say, this is what I want to have happen, thus and so. And so if they can answer those questions, then you're going to take that template and put it on top of the assets and go asset by asset by asset with that kind of basic plan in mind to arrive at the game plan that people have in mind.
How often do you have the children come in with the parents?
Never.
Oh, really? Just
never.
The parents?
Rarely do I have the children in, because their agenda is different than the parents. Yeah. And the issue with the children is that they're interested in mom and dad's wealth, but most parents are telling the kids essentially to butt out. None of your business. As long as we're alive, we'll control it, thank you. And so the parents will come in together, meaning the husband and the wife, and we'll discuss in terms of their situation. Is it a first marriage? Is it a second marriage? Is it a third marriage? Is there are there issues that they need to resolve in terms of the assets and what's going to be happening? Then you move out into the children. You move out into the grandchildren. You look at issues that the children have. Is there a family listening to this broadcast that doesn't have baggage, is what I call it? We all have issues that are sitting out there. So as I say, you know, what you read here, you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family. And we're stuck with the people that are in our family. Like in our situation, we have all sons. We can't control who they date, let alone who they marry. And so all of us as parents, we are stuck with the people that come into our family. And so when you are looking at those relationships against the field of the assets to say, if I was to pass away right now and I'm married, this is what I have in mind. If I pass away not married, this is what I have in mind. And then you take that and you apply it against the assets.
And scary also, you mentioned guardianship earlier.
Right.
So parents need to consider what happens if, heaven forbid, they pass away at the same time, or if they are a single parent, who takes care of the minor children in that situation? If they die without a will or a trust, what would happen in that situation?
There's a court hearing, and they're normally not fun because if it's a single parent, for example, then you have, are there grandparents on either side? I mean, there were two parents once upon a time when the child was born, and now if they're gone their separate ways, you still have grandparents that care, and so you could have a very challenging situation in front of the probate court as to who is to be the guardian. So is it your parents? Is it my grandparents? So because the grandparents have every bit as much of an interest there?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, Renee, because so many people think estate planning is about the finances and it's about the money. It's more important for most families, as Jay pointed out at the beginning, most families aren't going to pay estate tax. So it's really about what your wishes are and what you want to happen after you pass. Now, Jay, you used the term probate court. Most
right.
of our audience has probably never heard of probate court. What is probate?
Probate is a process whereby if you pass away without your affairs in order, you don't have a will, you don't have a trust, then the state of Utah has one for you. And so the probate process is the court naming somebody to be in charge of your affairs and then supervising that person in the implementation of the disposition of the assets according to what the probate code says.
Yeah, and probate's also a big differentiator between wills and trust.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, and share with our audience. Those are the primary tools, wills and trust. What's the differences? How's probate involved? And why might a family have a preference for one or the other?
Well, I have a strong bias, and there are some few exceptions, but I have a strong bias that most people do not want to be burdened by the probate process. What they want is to have a smooth process when one of us passes away. So if you and I were husband and wife and we're both in good health, we don't know who will pass away first. But if I die first, I want it smooth for you. If you die first, I want it smooth for me. That is normally accomplished inside of a trust. And what's the difference between a will and a trust? If the will controls the assets, it's always probated. So hear me on that. If a will controls the asset is always subject to the probate process. If a trust controls the asset, that means that I took my asset out of my name, I put it into a trust. And I named Doug, for example. Doug Wells is going to be my trustee. So therefore, I have the trust in place. I've got the plan of disposition in place. And I've named a person to go do that. And so if the probate judge is sitting over here, he has no role in that process happening because it's inside the trust.
So a trust gives the family much more control, it sounds like.
Well, it can be the same control with the will versus the trust, but what you're doing is you're taking the probate court out of the process.
I see, yeah.
And so it now happens free of that process. Have you heard the saying, the devil is what? It's in the details. Right. I'll give you two examples. If you were to say, Jay, do you have anything happening in a probate court right now? Let me give you two examples. Okay? I'm sitting here, and let's suppose it's Doug, if I was writing your document.
Hopefully it's not Doug that passed away in this example.
But if we were all done, and we now have the document, you're comfortable with it? Yes, and you've signed it. Okay, now we've been through all the assets. Do we have it all? Is it all? Have we touched everything? Yeah, there's nothing else out there. Doug passes away. In this case, here's a $180,000 investment account in his name alone. And so if the person passes away, owning an asset in his name alone, there's no beneficiary. There's no trust that controls it, so his will controls it. And so now and you would know the investment company, they have their SEC requirements, so they are not going to allow anybody to deal with those assets unless you have, the legal word is letters testamentary. What is letters testamentary? You go to the probate court and say this person's died, this person's been named as the executor or the personal representative of the estate. That gives them the authority to go and take charge of that account and dispose of it. And the will would say, move it into my trust. And so you had that stumbling block that's out there. Mm-hmm. Here's another one, briefly. Life insurance. So let's suppose that I'm writing Renee's documents, and so I'm saying, Renee, you need to go and tie all of your life insurance to this new trust. And so when you were living, say, in this case, in California, you had a California trust. Now you've moved to Park City. We write a Utah trust. And so we're going to take all of your assets and tie them to this Utah trust, and you signed a document terminating the California trust. But you never went back to the insurance company to say, will you please change my beneficiary from my California trust to my Utah trust? Renee passes away. And so the family goes in, and so suppose that Doug was named in charge of Renee's assets, you're going to go and collect the insurance. And who is Doug? He is the trustee of the Utah Trust. And yet the beneficiary said, it is the California Trust that doesn't even exist. And so the insurance company says, okay, I can see we have a problem here. Go and get a letters testamentary and get the control of those assets to put them into the Utah Trust.
And to the audience, this all sounds very complicated. What I would share is that's why you want professionals on your team to help you with this, to make sure that everything's been transferred over, Jay, in that case, the life insurance. But let's
keep it high level. So if you're going through, if you were then saying, I'd like to, I'm now motivated to get my act together. So I'm going to identify, what do you have in mind? I always want to talk about what do you have in mind as the plan.
And with that, what are the key decisions that you want people to think about when they're setting up a will or a trust with you?
Who gets the asset? And for example, I have a strong bias against dividing assets. I mean, suppose that the four of us were brothers and sisters. Here's three brothers and one sister sitting in this room. And mom and dad have passed away, and they leave the house to the four of us. Three of us want to sell it. He wants to keep it. He wants the rent, and he could use the depreciation off the rental of the house.
Well, then, Bob, you should buy the house.
Well, but the problem is that we now have an issue because four of us. And so I normally will say to the clients, why don't we just liquidate everything? Mm-hmm. We'll sell the house. We'll sell the Deer Valley property. We're going to liquidate the insurance. We liquidate the investment account. We're dividing it all up, so we now have a sack of cash divided by four. That way, the four of us are not any worse off because of mom and dad's passing, because we could all go our separate ways. I don't want to own anything with you as my brother or you as my sister. I just want to take my share and be done with it.
So that talks about the assets that can be sold. Oftentimes, the arguments are about the things that may not have a lot of monetary value.
Such as?
Dad's pocket watch.
That is at the head of the list. That's called TPP, tangible personal property. Tangible personal property. And everybody has things in their family that are sentimentally valuable, but not a whole lot of monetary value. Here's a love note that Dad wrote Mom on their first anniversary. Or here's a book that he gave her for the 25th anniversary with a very nice love note, and two of us want that book. You don't care, but others do care.
I'm not the sentimental guy in the room.
But the point is, or here's a real common one. I get a phone call. It's on the afternoon of the funeral. So the funeral was at noon. It's now 4 in the afternoon. And Susie is calling me saying, Renee is going through Mom's dresser drawer taking things. Can she do that? What am I supposed to say? Or here's another example. This one happened last year. Okay, Bob has gone and taken all of Dad's guns, all of his handguns and his rifles, because Dad said he could have them, and yet Dad's tangible personal property list says Doug gets all of the rifles. Okay, and so the issue at the top of the list for me is tangible personal property, because money is easily divisible, or the house, or a cabin. It's the sentimental things. And you can deal with it with a list, and most people don't.
And you have an interesting point in this outline that you gave us about after the spouse passes away, does the surviving spouse have the ability to change the trust, if it was a joint trust or a separate trust? So your spouse passes away, X number of years later, you meet someone else, you get remarried, can you change that first spouse's trust?
Let me stop you there. Let's leave a remarriage out of it. Okay. Let's stay in the first relationship, okay? And let's suppose that the husband has died first. And so if I was to say to my wife, you have an unlimited ability to amend the documents. Here are the two or three or the four children that we have, and you can do whatever you'd like. And yet, behind closed doors, you and I may not have been in harmony with who is to get how much or the restrictions. For example, maybe I wanted to have it sold and given to them, and yet you wanted to have it held in what we call a step distribution, that it goes out every 5 years, maybe like a third, a third, a third, or a fourth, fourth, a fourth. Now that I'm dead, can you come into my trust and amend it? And that's a very, very key question. Or suppose that there has been a 10-year lag between my death and your death, and the family landscape has changed. Can you come in on mine? In my document with my wife, we have given each other unlimited rights to amend. Mm. I know you. I trust your judgment. I think that you'll do the right thing when you look at the landscape of our children and our grandchildren. And so that's one of the key questions. There's no right or wrong answer. It's just, who do you want to have receive it? And if we're now 5 years past your death, 10 years past your death, am I putting boundaries on you?
There's just no way you can predict what may happen down the road. So it sounds like the best and the most common sense thing to do is to have someone you know and trust.
Well, ask me this question. If the spouse doesn't have an unlimited ability to amend, what do they have? What's the next most common? And here's the answer. I will give you, like if you and I were husband and wife, I would give you the right to amend for our descendants. And what are descendants? That's children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, spouses of descendants, and charity. Mm. So there's your framework. And so if Jay was to say to Renee, you have the ability to amend my document with those limitations, where else would you be going? Because if you want to change for our descendants and spouses of descendants, that's okay. What if it's 5 years later, we now have a member of our family that has been diagnosed with a disease and you want to put extra resources to deal with that disease? Shouldn't you have that ability? But then if you venture into the surviving spouse is now into another relationship, whether they're living with somebody, whether they're married with somebody, do you have the ability to come into my trust and provide a benefit for that person? Most of the time, the answer is no. I would say, you have your assets, you deal with that person out of your pile, not my pile. So again, there's no right or wrong answer. It's just doing what you do, doing what you want to have done, given how you view your family relationship, your family dynamics, and the assets that you have, and whether the assets are $500,000, what if it's $5 million? What if it's $25 million? The issues are still very much the same.
And, you know, this is why I think it's important people work with professionals. I still get asked a couple times a year by people that have significant assets, can't I just do this myself on Quicken Wills? You know, I can buy for 20. They can, but they're not going to be thinking about these issues that you're bringing up and having a discussion with people about.
Well, because most people have a Pollyanna set of glasses on when they write the document, that everybody's going to be kissy-poo and it'll go into the sunset with no issues. And yet, life is made up of people throwing curveballs, people stubbing their toe, not looking at all of the issues that are out there. Here's another, if I was vetting, looking for somebody, is one thing to write the documents, it's another thing to watch it play out. Ask the lawyer, how many times have you administered an estate after death? See? And it's and one thing to say, oh, I've been doing one a year for the last 10 years. Or how many wills and trusts have you written for people that are north of $5 million? How many people in Park City are worth $5 million or more?
Including many, their life many. Insurance. Yeah, people forget about that.
Including life insurance, right. Mm. And so it's one thing to write it and to have an opinion. Is another thing that the School of Hard Knocks teaches you that there should have been things different.
So, Jay, unfortunately, we need to wrap up, but I do want to get a chance. We were talking in the green room about your first job out of law school 42, 43 years ago. Quickly tell us about that, because I think it's a fun story.
I was a junior up at the University of Utah, and a lawyer from Pittsburgh had moved back to Utah. There was another person who had been in the national office of the IRS, another lawyer with the SEC. That was V.L. Kessler, Orrin Hatch, and Dick Gordon. So they formed a firm in 1970, Kessler, Hatch, and Gordon. They came to the law school and hired Paul Flammer and Jay Curtis. So I was privileged to carry Orrin Hatch's bag for a couple of years.
Well, that was a great start for your career. I've been fortunate to know you for many years. We appreciate you coming in and sharing your thoughts with us.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Our guest this morning has been Jay Curtis. He is an estate planning attorney with Ray Quinney and Nebaker. You want to stay tuned. Up next, we have Blake Christian, who is going to talk to us about the Trump tax proposal, as well as year-end things that we should be thinking about from a tax standpoint. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, introducing Apex Residences, 63 ski-through community residences located at Park City's expanded Canyon Village, with clubhouse amenities, heated outdoor pool, and in-house concierge. Information at apexparkcity.com.
Hi, this is Bob Dillon, a lawyer in the Park City office of Jones Waldo with 38 years of legal experience in complex real estate transactions. Proud supporters of KPCW, Jones Waldo provides local businesses with legal services in areas ranging from real estate to employment law. Our website is joneswaldo.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. Thank you again to Jay Curtis, our previous guest, estate planning attorney with Ray Quinney and Nebaker. In studio with us now is Blake Christian. He is a partner at the firm HCVT. He is an accountant. And there's a lot of talk on the news now about taxes. Blake, when we originally reached out to you, we were going to talk about year-end planning. But there's a more timely topic now, the Trump tax cuts. First, welcome to Mountain Money, and thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's jump into it. The Trump tax cut proposal officially came out last Thursday. It hasn't been much time, but high level, what are some of the big changes?
Well, there's a lot of talk that it just helps the rich, and it's anything but that. They left a 39.6% tax rate for people making more than $1 million. And then what I'm most excited about is the proposal to decrease the C-Corp tax rate to 20%. That makes us a little more competitive internationally. and then a 25% proposed rate on flow-through entities such as LLCs and S-corps. But that's a little deceiving because personal service corps like accounting firms, law firms, engineers will probably still have a good chunk of their money taxed at the highest rates.
For the individuals out there who are listening who don't own their own business, what's the biggest change for the individual income tax?
Well, I hate to use the word simplification, which is kind of the pitch, because this is 82 pages and it will grow, and it's actually pretty complex, most of the provisions. But in its simplest form, there's lower tax brackets or lower tax rates, but people get into those higher rates more quickly than they do under current law, so it's a little sneaky that way. And then the biggest impact for the average taxpayer is a lot of itemized deductions will go away. And so people that own their own home will only be allowed property tax, interest deduction, and state tax deduction goes away, state income tax. And then there's limits on your mortgage deductibility for any new purchases.
And what about, there was a lot of talk about 401ks. What's in the plan? Is that left unchanged, or are there modifications there?
Right now, that's left unchanged. I think that was a little bit of a red herring. And I think it'd be silly for the federal government to limit people's ability to put away qualified plan monies because there's all the studies show that people have not saved enough money. Hmm.
Let's go back to mortgages, if you don't mind. What's the change with the mortgage write-off? That tends to be the biggest write-off for most individuals. And how do you see that change affecting our real estate market here in Park City, which tends to be really high-end homes?
Right. Well, I don't have too many clients that have, well, they either, my clients are the two sides of the spectrum. Either they have no mortgage because mm-hmm. they've paid it off, or they have very large mortgages, often north of $1 million. And the new limit, and this again, it's grandfathered if you already have a home, but if you buy a home after the new law goes into effect as proposed, only interest on the first $500,000 of your mortgage is deductible.
So there actually could be an increase in the sales. I mean, if you're thinking about buying a house this year or next, it's a risky strategy to wait for next year. So there's a little bit of an incentive to get it done now. So we have high-end homes here in Park City. We also have probably more than our fair share of families that are on their second marriage.
Right.
I understand there's also a change in the tax deductibility of alimony payment.
That's correct. Right now, as drafted, there would be no deductibility of alimony payments, nor on the flip side, taxability of the alimony receipt. So that's
half the town's probably upset about this, but the other half is happy about it.
Right, right. So and it'd be tough for somebody to execute a divorce this close to year end. So I wouldn't advise that.
What about child tax credits?
Child tax credits will be. There's two things that kind of tie in. So they're going to double the standard deduction. And so less people will file, but those families with children will have an increase in the child care credit. There's actually two proposals still out there. One is the elimination of the child credit, and then there's still a push to increase that. So I couldn't even guess where that's going to come out. I think there's going to be a lot of fighting on that.
And medical costs, is there any change in this tax reform about deducting medical costs?
Right now, as drafted, no medical deduction.
At all?
Right.
So, and that's subject to a 2% of AGI limitation.
And under the current rules, 10% AGI for medical, which would be your premiums as well as your out-of-pocket costs. But, there's just not a lot left on Schedule A for deductions.
And what about...
Including tax preparation fees.
Oh, really?
But so if you have a business, though, we would push that over to the business side.
And what about your advice to clients? So 6 months ago, you know, if clients were saying, hey, in November, what are some things that I should be thinking about? Have any of those items changed the advice you would have given 6 months ago based on what's going on now as far as your end goes?
It's still pretty similar. It's for the most part, it's accelerate deductions into 2017 and especially itemized deductions. You may even want to think about erring on the side of prepaying a little bit extra of your state income tax. As you know, in Utah, you don't have to prepay that. You can pay it in April, but now you would want to accelerate it into 2017. Also, you'd want to make sure that you pay all of your property taxes. One thing going back to mortgages also, they would not allow vacation home interest deductions, and we have a whole lot of those types of taxpayers here in Park City.
And charitable contributions, that's big. We're a nonprofit radio station. We stay on the air thanks to the generosity of the people who are listening to us. Will they be able to continue to write off their contributions?
I've analyzed that for another publication. And actually, when you boil it all down, the new tax law will increase the benefits of charitable contributions. And here's why. 90% of our clients are in AMT right now, alternative minimum tax. Alternative minimum tax is set to be eliminated, which, again, is very good news from my standpoint and our taxpayers' standpoint. So right now, our higher-end taxpayers who are very philanthropic are only getting 28 cents on the dollar federally because they're subject to AMT, and even though their ordinary income may be taxed at 39.6. Now with the elimination of the AMT, they're going to get, in the most cases, at least a 35% benefit, and in a lot of cases, 39.6% benefit. So if taxes are a big driver for their philanthropy, you should see more charitable contributions.
You just made a lot of nonprofits in this town very happy with that summation.
And don't you have a big program coming up Thursday or Friday?
Friday. Live there PC, Give PC all day. They're trying to raise $2 million for all the area nonprofits.
Right. I would encourage both 2017 and 2018 contributions to that.
Thank you.
Although, if what I heard is correct, the benefit's going to be better in 2018. So while we don't want people holding off their charitable deduction, that dollar given away is going to be more valuable if they do it to the taxpayer, if they do it in 2018. Did I hear you correctly?
That's correct. So if somebody was going to give a very large contribution, you know, $50,000, $100,000, I would push them out into 2018. But if it's their normal giving, I would put it in both years.
What about death? Should we push back our death to 2018 if we can? What's going on with the state plan? We just had Jay Curtis in here.
Absolutely. So if one of your relatives is, you know, hooked up to a machine and you can unplug them, it has happened. You would push that off into 2018 when the exemption will double.
What if you're thinking about getting married in December of this year? Should you wait until 2018?
From a marriage standpoint, you would the joint rates are always better. So if both spouses are working, then yes, 2018 would give you an advantage. But I never encourage people to get married or divorced just for tax purposes.
that's good advice. So Jay was just in here talking about the estate planning. As he mentioned, the exemption's high. That's going to double. Right. So the vast majority of Americans, probably 99% plus, under the current rule, at least 90% of Americans don't have to worry about paying estate tax. That's probably going to increase quite a bit with the doubling. There is something in estate planning, though, where you get a step-up in basis. Talk to our audience about what that is, and is that changing at all under the proposal?
Right. So the exemption is going to jump from, under the proposal, 5.6 to 11.2. So, and that's per individual. So a married couple would have almost 23 million excludable. And so, it's like 0.2% probably of the population, maybe 0.1% will ever be subject to estate tax. That jump was not a surprise. The big surprise was they have left for the time being, but I think it'll get attacked, is a step up in basis. So if you are the heirs to your family's estate and you're once both your parents pass away under current law, the value of their assets, they may have a home that they bought for $200,000 that's worth $1.5 million now. That house gets stepped up to $1.5 million fair market value, and when you sell it, you have very little gain or loss. And the same would hold true for any other assets they own.
But if they got rid of step-up in basis, you'd be paying capital gains tax on that for everything above what your parents initially paid for that house maybe 30, 40 years ago.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah, that has a big impact on virtually every American. So, you know, hopefully there is some protection for that, because that does have a big impact. What about businesses? You know, one of the popular things if you own a business is, you know, buying a vehicle through your business and depreciating that over time. And you've been able to, in the last couple of years, you've been able to depreciate it more quickly, which is beneficial. Any changes to that?
Actually, this is, you know, one of the, you know, the bedrock pieces of the Trump legislation is to stimulate businesses is to allow immediate expensing, 100% expensing of fixed assets that you use in the business. Back to your buying an automobile to be used in the business, the IRS will look at the personal versus business use, but the business use piece of that, currently you can expense it under Section 179 up to a point. If it's an SUV, you have more liberal rules. If it's just a standard vehicle, you know, passenger vehicle, you're highly limited on how much you can claim.
And it's not because the IRS likes SUVs. It has to do with the weight of the vehicle. Is that correct?
Right.
Being the bigger vehicle is more likely to be used for business.
Right. You actually have Rolls-Royce to thank for that. Back in 1980, they slipped that legislation in and said, well, you know, let's put 6,000 pounds in there. That would be kind of a commercial vehicle. Well, their cars just happen to weigh more than 6,000 pounds. So,
all right. On that note, unfortunately, we have to wrap up. But if the audience has ever wondered why SUVs weigh so much, that might be a factor. Our guest this morning has been Blake Christian. He's a partner at HCVT. We thank you for joining us, Blake.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And stay tuned to Mound Money. Tom Klein of Loop Messenger will be next.
This is Charlie from Wasatch Arborists, a proud supporter of KPCW. Wasatch Arborists has been providing tree trimming, tree removal, stump grinding, and fire mitigation to residential and commercial customers in Summit and Wasatch County since 2010. More information at wasatcharborists.com. or 200-5544.
Create lasting holiday memories with your family during the Kimball Art Center Fall Art Classes. With classes for all ages, you can learn how to make clay fairy houses, holiday mosaics, handmade holiday cards, or even gingerbread house sculptures. For adult students, immerse yourself at our Sip and Sketch session at Old Town Cellars. Space is limited. Sign up at KimballArtCenter.org. Kimball Art Center is a nonprofit organization and a KPCW supporter. Art starts here.
Matt here from San Francisco Design. Since the start of our business in 1990, we have been supporting KPCW. We offer home decor for Park City and Salt Lake and feature modern furnishings from around the world. Whether you're looking to furnish an entire home or just redecorating a single room, we can help with our in-house design team. Located on Bonanza Drive and on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Welcome back to Mound Money. We're shifting gears now. We've been talking about estate tax. We've been talking about income tax. Now we're going to talk about the process of building things of value so that you have to worry about that. In studio with us now, we have a local entrepreneur, Tom Klein. You may have heard Tom on the air before here at KPCW. Earlier, he had an app called Suggest It. He did what's known in the business as a pivot. Suggested is now Loop Messenger. First, Tom, welcome to Mound Money.
Good morning, Doug. Thank you.
So tell us what Loop Messenger does and how maybe it's different than Suggested.
Well, Loop Messenger is a pure group messaging application, whereas Suggested was a simple application that let you know what was happening around town, or was designed to let you know what was happening around town.
And this will really help people. For example, you've got a kid on the soccer team and you get all sorts of soccer emails that flood your email box. The soccer team can sign up with your product to facilitate clearer communication to parents.
Absolutely. For instance, email has a 20% open rate overall, so people just aren't reading emails. Messaging, whether it's text messaging or other messaging platforms, is how people are digesting new information, short-form messaging. And that's what Loop Messenger is designed to help out with in a group, a dedicated group setting.
How did you come up with the idea?
Well, it's an evolution from Suggested. We noticed in Suggested there were events that were posted about four, let's say, hockey teams and other things that people were posting. And we realized with Suggested, people didn't really want to have a dedicated application just to see what was happening around town. It sounds great in theory, but in practice, it really wasn't fully viable. Where group messaging is something that there's a problem out with people getting too many notifications and being frustrated with too many text messages. So that was the problem we saw with Suggested, and we pivoted towards the direction of Loop.
Well, that's where I was going. So text messaging is, you know, when I want to get a hold of my friends, I use a text, right? Because the email is going to take 2 days to hear back, where a text I'll usually hear back in a couple minutes. But your app is different than text messages to the groups, to the soccer group that Renee was talking about. How's it different?
Well, text messaging people, it's very personal. It's your closest friends and your closest contacts. When you get too many text messages, everyone starts to get frustrated. And I think everyone who has had group text messages for things such as soccer teams and bike clubs and so forth, it gets a little bit overwhelming. They don't want text messaging in that platform. Plus, with regular group text messaging, sometimes you don't know who's replying because all you see is phone numbers and you don't see the other people. If you have an Android device versus an iOS device, it starts to split up into two different threads, and so the groups start to disband a little bit. So the difference is for a group environment that you may not be best friends with, such as a soccer team. You don't really have to communicate with all the parents on the soccer team or all the kids. You're just more of a distribution for group communication. You want a different environment for that.
How does it look on your phone? How does it appear different than a text message or an email alert?
It's meant to look very familiar. So it's meant to be simple and give you that familiar look, with the exception that it's a little bit more organized. With Loop, you have a new conversation, and then you have replies or comments related to that conversation. So for instance, you get a notification about there's a soccer game on Sunday at 6:30. Most of the time, that's really all you want to know, is just when that game is. If there are 20 other comments related to that soccer game, you probably don't want to get notified for all 20 comments. So with Loop, you get to decide whether you want to just get that primary notification for that new conversation or that new post, or the additional 20 replies to that conversation. It's up to you.
So let's stay with how it looks and feels to the user. So I would say the look and feel is inspired by apps that people are using already, right? Facebook, Twitter, and it's designed to give them that familiar GUI interface. And I use the app in the little blurb you gave us for your business. You talked about mountain biking groups using it. That's mm-hmm. That's what I use it for, is my mountain biking group, as you know, Tom. But so it's a beautiful app, Loop. But it's expensive to make an app beautiful. Talk to us about the process of building it, and how difficult is it to make something in an application look like what we're used to using in Facebook and Twitter?
Yeah, that's the thing. When you look at an application like Loop or others that seem, for the most part, simple to use, what some people can appreciate and others may not realize is that the simpler it looks, the more difficult and more challenging it is to
simple
make.
Simple is hard.
Simple is very hard. And the complexity, the logic to get everything right, and the thousands of pieces of logic that go behind it is a exercise in trial and error. And most of the time it's error until you figure out what people really want.
How many businesses are using Loop?
Businesses, I don't have that number right now, but in terms of groups.
Percentage-wise, do you have mostly just recreational groups or families or businesses?
We have groups now all over the world using it. It's in a number of just a couple hundred groups right now, but we've only been out for three or four weeks now. So there's a couple hundred groups that are using it. We have lots of groups at West Virginia University. We did a little event out in West Virginia, so a lot of the groups at the West Virginia University are using Loop Messenger, and we're trying to figure out what really is going to be our ultimate marketing strategy to get as many groups using Loop as possible.
I know here at the radio station, I'm looking at Bob Hendricks, our producer, a lot of emails fly back and forth. We've got 50-plus volunteer DJs, and when it comes to scheduling volunteer DJs and managing all of that communication, it really becomes overwhelming, Tom. I'm sure that's with a lot of businesses. So I think, wow, well, we have 12 full-time employees. If there's something I want just those 12 full-time employees to see, would Loop Messenger be an effective way of doing that if they all have their smartphones?
We think that would be one of the ideal use cases, is whether it's a wait staff at a restaurant or you're staffing here at the radio station, any of those distributed type of groups or dedicated groups that if you have a wait staff or a kitchen staff at a restaurant, or if you have a hospitality staff at the hotels that are, some may be for housekeeping, those are perfect examples of where Loop is a great medium to distribute short form text messaging, because that's what really people look at and want to digest.
And, you know, the nice thing about short form text messaging is there are so many applications for it, right? You have it on the business side. You have it on the user side. You have a built-in virality to the app as well. In my case, my mountain biking group is about 100 people. So I decided to use Loop, and all of a sudden Loop was introduced free of charge to the company, to Loop, to 100 different people that have their own applications as well and are thinking about, should I use this for work? We only have a minute or two left, so I want to come back to Park City. How has the town, what are some organizations here locally that have helped you on this journey?
Well, we've been the journey with KPCW helping us at Suggest It. KPCW has been a supporter of figuring this out. And we have numerous businesses around town that are helping. Five Seeds, for instance, uses it with their wait staff and so forth. And Pando Labs and Ted McAleer have been very helpful over the years, as yourself, Doug Wells. Supporting the efforts of trying to figure this all out and trying to bring an app to the market that people will really appreciate.
And what keeps you going through this? I mean, this has been a tough journey. You're probably probably 4 or 5 years. Is that correct?
4 years. Yeah, 4 years. It's been.
What keeps you going? What is it about the entrepreneurial journey that keeps you hooked?
Some days are easier than others, but every day is challenging. But the ability to try and build something and solve a problem is really what you're after. It's just like a little kid in the sandbox that's trying to figure out how to build a sandcastle. At the end of the day, that's what you're really trying to do. And when you feel like you can actually achieve that, you get that satisfaction. And I think that's what every entrepreneur is after.
And if you can help people sift through all of that clutter in their inbox for their email, or all the crazy text messages and Facebook messages and direct Twitter messages and Snapchats that they get, holy Hannah, Tom, that would be a big coup.
Yeah, it would. And, one of the things we hope to do with Loop Messenger is that we really want to, many of us are beholden to the global social networks of Facebook and Twitter and everything else. We want to position Loop as a community messenger where communities can get information, whether it's not just your soccer team or church groups or whatever it may be. But if an entire community is using an application for this, that becomes even more powerful, because we don't have to sift through information on these global social networks where something better like Loop is.
Well, Tom, we thank you for coming in and sharing your story with us again and sharing part of your journey. We hope to have you in again in the future. If you're looking for that app, it's if you do a search on Loop, L-O-O-P, on both Android and iOS, you will be able to find it.
And to clarify, it's actually you need to search, since it's so new, for Loop Messenger on the Play Store and on iOS App Store.
Okay, so we thank Tom for joining us. We also thank our great underwriters to Mountain Money. We couldn't do this show without our underwriters. We thank them greatly. They include Mountain West Bank, Park City Chamber Bureau, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough, Columbus Pacific Properties with Viridian and Apex Residences, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties, and Vicasa of Park City.
And we want to thank our guests. We started the hour with Jay Curtis, with Ray Quinney and Nebaker. He talked about estate planning with us. Then Blake Christian, he's a partner at HCVT. He's here in Park City. He talked about the new tax reform. That was interesting. And then Tom Klein with Loop Messenger. This has been Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley, here with my co-host Doug Wells and our producer Bob Hendricks. You're listening to KPCW Park City. We have one underwriting spot, and then we're going to go right to NPR News. Thanks for listening today.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com. Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.